Hi everyone, this is Angela Stockman. Welcome. I am honored to have you here to talk a little bit about what I mean when I say let's make writing. I know that many people, when they hear that call to action, are probably wondering, what is she even talking about? Why would we want to do that? And what does it look like? How do we make that happen inside of our classrooms or our writing workshops or studios? I'm calling people to make writing, and I have been for quite some time now, because I have witnessed exactly how that elevates the quality of students' written work. And when I say written in this context, I mean the production of letters and words. I've also witnessed how making writing engages them, how it builds closer community inside of our workshops and classrooms, and how it really begins to sharpen certain skills for writers that are almost always overlooked and neglected inside of our writing workshops. And when I say ours, I mean mine, because I spent a lot of time not paying attention to the important role that making plays inside of a writing workshop. I started my career in 1993, and I was a writing workshop teacher for well over a decade before I left the classroom to become a professional learning facilitator for New York State. I worked for a BOCES, which is an intermediary between the state and the local school districts. And in that role, I served 26 component school districts. Facilitated workshops, visited their schools, led a lot of work around curriculum, instruction, and assessment, and in that role met quite a few teachers who were passionate about teaching writing workshop curriculum, about creating those cultures inside of their classrooms, but also feeling pretty much alone because this was the world before EduTwitter and before social networks rose up to bring teachers together in community with those outside of their districts. And so anytime I went into a school system, there were a few sets of eyes lighting up in the room in every writing workshop conversation that I facilitated, but they were looking for company. At the same time, I'd come out of a pretty substantial teaching career with quite a few stones in my own shoe around teaching writing and inside of a writer's workshop in particular, where we were offering a lot of voice and choice. And I was doing all of the things that the experts in the field suggested I should be doing to move writers forward. Excuse me. And still, there were not a few kids, but quite a few kids who professed to dislike writing and who really were not putting down words that were reflective of their potential. So I decided in 2008 to leave my role as a staff developer in that capacity, and I opened on my own something called the Western New York Young Writers Studio. The purpose of that community was to bring K-12 writers and teachers together in a common community outside of the school system where we could investigate what writing really was, how to do it well, and how to nurture other writers and help them become great too. Teachers were invited to participate as learners beside K-12 writers, and the expectation was that those in our community would engage in documentation work and disseminate their findings back to the field, that they would give their learning back to the field in some capacity, and there was a lot of choice. I'd done an action research project for a number of years with the support of my own professional learning community. And a lot of that work was grounded in the collection of qualitative data in the form of photographs, audio recordings, video recordings, annotations that I gathered from my interviews with writers, their work samples. I'd spent a good chunk of the summer coding that data on my kitchen table and living room floor. My husband was really privy to all of that because he would wander by every once in a while and glance at my sticky notes, and we would talk. And he'd been out on the porch one afternoon reading the newspaper, and he came in and said, "There's this thing called a maker fair going on in San Francisco, and what I'm noticing in this article are a lot of the words that are all over your sticky notes that you're creating as you code your data. And that's where my interest was piqued even further. What I've been discovering in my writing studio and what my very amateurish data was suggesting was that when writers were not inclined to put down letters and words, and even resistant to that invitation in a way that revealed a lot of frustration, if I asked them what they would rather be doing other than writing, 100% of the time, and it was up to 900 kids at this point, 100% of the time, they were naming things that sounded like making. And so I began to wonder how we might make the writing experience and the process itself function more like making. And there were already some commonalities there. The Venn diagram between making and writing was already established, I think, at that point, well enough that people in the field were comparing revision to iteration and drafting to prototyping. But there's a lot of nuance there, and there was a lot to play with. And then I became even more compelled as I learned about Reggio Emilia approaches and was invited to go on several study tours there and began to glimpse the potential for materials and loose parts specifically to inspire metaphorical thinking and to elevate the quality of the vocabulary words we're using when we describe our intentions. When I talk about making writing, like many, I'm talking about the production of multimodal compositions that an audience will appreciate. Things like websites or podcasts, stop motion videos and infographics that have a lot of color and a spatial layout that's pleasing and the thoughtful choices around things like font. But when I'm talking about making writing, I'm also talking about using materials throughout the process other than letters and words to represent our ideas and our plans. Structure matters here. And so we often begin by defining the elements of whatever form we're going to create. What are the parts of an infographic? What are the parts of a narrative? What are the parts of an argument? What are the parts of this website? And then we use loose parts to rapidly prototype, typically in one class period, our intentions for each of those parts. Why would we use materials? Because when I put pencils and pens and keyboards in students' hands, they will typically select the idea that they are most capable of sharing using that mode of expression. And what we know is that for all human beings, what we are typically capable of sharing with written letters and words is less complex than what we might be able to express using other modes of expression that don't require them. Producing letters and words is tough stuff. It's hard, and writing is always oral first. So when I invite students to use Lego or Play-Doh or to draw or to act something out, the whole of their draft, what I typically want to know is, do you have a coherent plan and some rich ideas for each of the parts, the beginning, the middle, and the end? Or the parts of the whole that will show up on a website? What's going to go in each space? They can typically rapidly prototype that, even sometimes an entire novel, in a single writing workshop session or class period, if they're not required to use letters and words, and they know what the structure is and the elements inside of it. Once we have a good idea, you know, once I'm certain that they have a long view and I can get an aerial view of what it is they want to create, and they have the pieces in place, they'll typically take a picture of that or jot their ideas down in a notebook. But then the next session, I begin teaching into each of those elements deeply. So we'll focus on just the beginning. And there may be four or five different mini lessons where writers are learning, focusing on a learning target or a teaching point and learning how to bring that to life inside of their writing. And they will build it first using loose parts, just a few minutes. They will typically transition what they've built to written words by the end of the period, and they're producing just one small bit. How do they do that? It's different for every writer. Some writers will build something and they feel very comfortable and confident leaping right from that to the production of written words. People will say then, why put the materials in their hands at all? Why not just let them produce volumes of print and go right to the production of written words? And that's because those of you who have been doing this for some time, you get this. Materials speak a different language than written letters and words, and each material speaks a language of its own. When I have writers build with feathers and pine cones and stones, it inspires very rapidly the production of similes and metaphors and symbols. This sort of thinking leads to far more beautiful and complex written words, and that does not happen in the absence of making and inside of the writing experience. Some writers produce such sophisticated things that they do not yet have the print power to write about them using letters and words. And in those cases, we will use transcription. They will audio record what they would prefer to put down in print. They will listen to that audio recording, and they will begin to write just a very small portion of their draft, like a sentence or a paragraph. They will ask people to help them with the spelling of words or rely on tools to do that. Some begin with labels. And those labels might be spelled imperfectly, but we're able to move from that imperfect sort of prototyping and drafting to print pretty seamlessly and without experiencing unproductive levels of frustration, because we're taking it one bit at a time. And because typically all writers are struggling in a really meaningful way to get their very best ideas and their most sophisticated ideas into print. It's not just the kids who we typically stereotype, incorrectly so, as strugglers. So this is what it looks like to make writing in my world. It's not just the production of multimodal products, but it's a multimodal process as well. And it is a multimodal process that is not about cute or fun, no matter how pretty those pictures look like that you saw on whatever social media network you're a part of. I encourage anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to actually engage with me around this to reach out, because it's something I love talking about. I'm happy to share my work around and to involve you in a deeper conversation that can inform and evolve your own thinking and work here as well. I'm saving the most important conversation for last, and I will take just a couple of minutes to have it. Making writing is disruptive in a way that is uncomfortable for those who are not yet willing or able to interrogate the roots of the writing process as we've typically defined it inside of K-12 schools, or the way that we teach that process inside of K-12 schools. The fact is that writing has always been multimodal, and those are not my words. Many people inside of this work who have published built an entire lifetime and career around it, they've said this for a very long time. Writing has been multimodal since the dawn of time, when human beings began expressing themselves. And if you have a good understanding of our cultural and our racial history, particularly in this country, the United States of America, and how it was constructed and built, then we know that the modes of expression that are typically preferred by individualistic human beings, individualists, are very different than the modes of expression at times that are most preferred by those who come from more communal cultures. When we think about who built our schools and which culture our schools were built for, it becomes very clear that we have a very narrow definition of what it means to compose inside of our K-12 schools. And the irony around all of that, and it is a bitter one, is that once we leave the world of academia, The production of written letters and words alone is not enough. The world demands something better and something more, and it has for quite some time. So our refusal to integrate making and writing in our writing workshops and to focus more on the explicit teaching of multimodal composition and design skills, it shortchanges all writers, because the most influential people in every field are those who are able to translate written words into other modes of expression. They're the ones who are multimodal, who are confident and capable and competent in that work. And our refusal to make more space for it, and I say refusal with intention because I've been doing this for quite some time now, and what I sense is not simply an ignorance that overlooks things because we're not informed, but it is a refusal for a lot of different reasons. And most importantly, because we want to focus on how we've always done it inside of our schools. That refusal creates so many inequities, and it isn't preparing kids for the world that they are about to greet. So I invite you into this work and conversation. It is not about tossing out and rejecting all we've ever known, but it is about teaching writing in a richer, in a far more colorful and beautiful and dynamic and, yes, inclusive way. So I welcome you to that conversation, and I encourage you to reach out to me to talk more. If you are in my orbit at all, then the Mic Writing Starter Set is something that I share pretty widely. It is free. If you can get your hands on that inside of one of my courses, if that's how you're coming upon this particular podcast, or by emailing me directly at stockmanangela@gmail.com, I'm happy to share that with you, and it will add some practicality to this rather ethereal conversation.